KALW.
I think she represents the bravery and the courage to really create one's own path.
Today, we hear about a play that portrays the historical hardship and heart of Bay Area Chinese immigrants.
It would take your entire financial savings in order to send one family member through that journey.
Stories from the Chinese Exclusion Act. Then we'll learn the secret that unlocked a new life for the historic immigration station at Angel Island.
I came through and I saw calligraphy, Chinese carvings on the wall.
And we visit a state park where the past and present live side by side.
Could be interviewing Frank every night and writing things down, and but then it's just living it.
Remembering China Camp before it was a state park. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The play The Far Country takes audiences back to the era of the Chinese Exclusion Act. It follows characters from China, where they dream for a better life in the U.S. After reaching American shores, some endure the nightmare of being held at Angel Island Immigration Station in San Francisco. What helped them get through being detained, in part, was the poetry they carved into the walls. Actress Sharon Shao plays Yuan, a tough young woman from rural China. She spoke with KALW's Janae Darden.
Sharon Shao, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much, Janae.
This play is really incredible, The Far Country. What drew you to this play? Why did you want to be a part of it?
I have always been such a fan of Lloyd Saw's writing, ever since I read his other play, actually, The Chinese Lady, which is a beautiful historical fiction. I was really drawn to his use of language and storytelling and the intricate details of a history that he's able to weave in so like beautifully into like a story that you really are drawn into. Because I think more than anything, it is a story about a family and three generations of families forging family together. And the resilience of that.
And you play two characters, but I just want to talk about for now one of them, Yuan. And what I noticed about her is that she breaks stereotypes of Asian women of being docile. And I think she breaks stereotypes of women just of that era. She's not soft-spoken. She's very strong. Tell us a little bit more about her without giving too much away. And how did you connect with that character?
Yeah, absolutely. She comes in like a flame. I think she represents the bravery and the courage to really create one's own path. And especially as a young woman, and especially at that time and where she's coming from, you know, everything about her is just so defiant and so powerful.
And when we meet her, she's like in rural, looks like it's like rural part of China in the farmlands. And she wants to come to America.
Yeah.
The United States.
Yes, exactly. She's in a small village in Toisan. And the story is that her brother already went through Angel Island and unfortunately didn't make it when it was sent back. And if you were sent back, it was, you know, it was considered kind of like social suicide in a way, like your family would be so ashamed of you and it would take, you know, your entire financial savings in order to send one family member through that journey. It's super expensive.
So there are Chinese immigrants who are already here in the United States, and then they would go back to China and they would sell their name. And so like your name, your last name is Shao. So like you could go back to China and like sell your name to somebody who maybe their last name is Wang, right? But they want to come to the United States and be a citizen. And so you would sell their name and pretend like you're related to them. Like, I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the debt they'd had to pay off because they had to pay off to the person name they bought.
And sometimes, you know, it would take, in the case of Meng Ye, the main character in our play, they assumed it would take maybe a matter of like 3 months or something, but it was much, much longer, you know, his time at Angel Island. And while you're detained there, you're collecting more debt. Like I think they charged you. And so, you know, the more time that you had to file a case against the Board of Special Inquiry, that would take more and more money too. So it's crazy how much debt you would accumulate. And the financial debt, you know, that like practical debt, but then there is also an emotional debt that you're paying towards the person that you're buying the name off of.
Right.
And I imagine that that kind of dynamic is interesting. And then the debt that you pay back towards your family for sending, or that felt debt of who's left behind.
Being there, and something that really struck me was the interrogation process that they would have to go through. So I understand. So the play takes place a few years after the big 1906 earthquake. And so at that time, after the earthquake, documents at City Hall were burned down because all those fires erupted in San Francisco. And so, which led to something called Paper Sons, where new Chinese immigrants, they purchased documents and falsely identified themselves as children of Chinese American citizens. And so the immigration officers would have these harsh interrogation procedures on these people. I mean, it was the questions they would ask.
Yeah.
Like, how many stairs go to your house? How many stairs go to your school? I mean, it was just, it was like, who, and even one of the immigration officers, and they were usually white, they were like, I don't know the answer, how many stairs, what kind of tree is behind your house? And what bird do you hear at night? And if you didn't answer those questions, you might end up at Angel Island.
Yeah. Yeah. Or sent back.
Or sent back. Yeah.
And oftentimes it didn't even matter whether the questions were answered correctly or not. That was also something we learned on our trip to Angel Island, was that it actually had to do with your demeanor. So if you sounded like too cocky, or if you sounded too rehearsed, or if there was literally anything that immigration officer picked out from you, they could use that as some reason to deny your entry. Mm-hmm. So let's just be so clear about that. It literally was, the entire thing was just a tactic for racism to keep Chinese immigrants out.
And you mentioned Angel Island, and I understand the cast. You all took a trip to Angel Island. How did that experience inform you, inspire you in these roles? Mm. What did you take from that and bring into your roles?
Thank you. That's a great question. I think one thing that really stood out was that element of community, because there were so many of them together at all times. You were never alone, right? And I think that's like a theme that rings true for so many different like kinds of groups of immigrants, not just Chinese, but all people. Like, it takes a village, that whole saying. And I call my cast and crew and design team and everybody, like, that's our village. And we're doing this conjuring together. We're saying these words, or these real words that people then wrote and scratched onto the walls. Maybe they were studying with each other. So it was like this huge community that was suffering in community. And so I do take that with me into this show, that it's not necessarily like an ensemble piece. Like, I'm not on stage until the second act for most of my scenes. I feel that it's so important to me to like hold that space of like everything that we have seen from China over to the US, like, you know, in terms of this play, like, it has to be carried through. I have to carry that torch.
The poetry in the barrack walls is beautiful. And I was thinking about just how they used art to mentally survive, you know, and the art that they used was poetry. And when you go to the Berkeley Rep, when you go in the bathroom, they have the poetry from the barrack walls. I write poetry, so I had to stop before I used the bathroom to just read that. I was like, I need to finish this poem and go back. So, because the play was about to start, because we were in intermission. But it's just amazing too, because I guess the Angel Island station officials, they covered up the poetry with putty. It was mentioned in the show, and then like 30 years later, it came out. It came off. So those Angel Island spirits wanted to be heard.
Yeah, they did. They can't be silenced. That line always gets me every time, you know, just thinking about that, that they slowly, you know, that attempt to cover them just deteriorates, and what's left behind is the truth of it.
That was actress Sharon Shao speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. The Far Country is playing at the Berkeley Repertory Theater until April 14th. We've got the details at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Angel Island is now a designated National Historical Landmark, and you can take a ferry to see the poetry of Chinese immigrants scrawled in the walls of the immigration station, some over 100 years old. Between 1910 and 1940, more than 500,000 people from 80 different countries entered the U.S. through the immigration station on Angel Island. But after World War II, the station was shut down and neglected. Today, visitors to the island can sign up for guided walking tours to see recreated living conditions for the roughly 300,000 detainees that were held for weeks, months, and sometimes years. And all that is thanks to one man who uncovered the island's historical significance. Back in 2005, I went to Angel Island to hear his story.
On a clear day, the ferry ride to Angel Island is a soothing experience, with majestic views of the Golden Gate Bridge, the island's lush greenery, and the sun's rays glistening off the bay waters. Alex Weiss was a ranger here at Angel Island State Park in 1970. One day, he wandered into one of the old buildings on the island that was scheduled for demolition that year. It used to be an army barracks, as far as he knew. The guardian of the western gates, they called it. He was walking through the rundown barracks with his flashlight when he noticed something on the walls.
And I came through and I saw these calligraphy Chinese carvings on the wall. And I said, wow, that's pretty impressive. And then I kept going into this main room, which was a dormitory for Chinese detainees. And noticed that the entire walls were covered with calligraphy.
It turned out Weiss had stumbled upon a secret hidden for decades. It wasn't just calligraphy, it was poetry.
My freedom withheld. How can I bear to talk about it? I look to see who is happy, but they only sit quietly. I am anxious and depressed and cannot fall asleep. The days are long, and the bottle constantly empty.
140 Chinese poems were carved into the barracks' wooden walls, and they shared a common theme: sadness, misery, and humiliation. They revealed a forgotten past on the island. Before it was an army barracks, the building was a detention center for the island's immigration station in 1910, called the Ellis Island of the West. This bell sounded whenever a new ship of Chinese immigrants was approaching Angel Island in the early 1900s. They were met with officials who herded them into overcrowded detention barracks for interrogation. Immigrants lived in the barracks between 1 week to 2 years. Robert Fung is an Asian history professor at San Francisco State University. He says it was the first time a group was named by race to be excluded from coming into the country.
The Chinese Exclusion Act, written in 1882, said that if you're a Chinese, if you're a Chinese laborer, you cannot come to America. You know, the law was made specifically to target the Chinese. It was later amended to make it even more restrictive, because the view, the mythology of the Chinese was that they were here to take our jobs away, cheap labor competition.
It felt like a jail.
Lai Kang Wong arrived at Angel Island when she was just 7 years old. Her father was living in Oakland and sent for her and her sisters to come to America to receive an education, something that wasn't available to them in China.
I was traumatized because I told you about the locked doors, the bar windows, and the way the guards treated us. Whenever we wanted to talk, they would try to look at us. We were told what time to eat. We were told what time to go to the bathroom. There was no such thing as a book available for us to read. There was no such thing as anything, like even little toys for kids to play with.
Conditions at the station were fit for unwelcome guests. Detainees like Lai King slept in thin metal triple bunk beds. They had to disrobe in groups of 30 for intimate medical exams. The doors were locked and guarded. The poems on the walls told countless stories.
Curled up in an enclosure, my movements are dictated by others. Enduring 100 humiliations, I can only cry in vain. This person's tears fall, but what can the blue heavens do?
Hoping to save the barracks from demolition, Alex Weiss told his superiors about the poems. He says they weren't interested and told him they had other plans for the land. But Weiss says he's always believed there was another reason.
Maybe some of the higher-ups thought this was not a good story to tell because it was a story of racism and bad treatment of Americans to immigrants.
Weiss didn't take no for an answer. He and Lai Kang Wong joined Bay Area Chinese Americans to spearhead a vigorous public awareness campaign. That led to a 2000 California vote assigning $15 million for the preservation and restoration of the immigration station. A chain of federal, state, and private funds followed, taking it off the list of the 11 most endangered historic sites in America. In 2005, the Angel Island station was closed for renovation. The renovations include a new museum. Visitors will be able to see live reenactments of how immigrants were checked in and interrogated in the early 1900s.
The Chinese people and the people from the Far East have contributed just as much as the European immigrants who came through Ellis Island.
For those like Lai King Wong, who lived through the Angel Island experience, seeing the station restored is important, no matter how bleak that picture may be.
And each strand in our flag will represent some segments of the different ethnic groups. And I feel very strongly if we pull out one of the strands, let's say the Chinese strand, it's no longer United States history.
As for Ranger Weiss, he says he's proud to be a part of the movement that saved a crucial part of the American story.
We need to face our history, whether it's not that honorable for us to some of the things we did and also some of the good things we did. So history is history. You can't just spin it to say it never happened.
Former Ranger Alex Weiss died in October of 2014, but he did live long enough to witness, in 2010, the 100th anniversary of the opening of the immigration station, when President Obama declared every January 21st National Angel Island Day. And this weekend, the Oakland Ballet Company will preview their Angel Island project at the Dancing Moons Festival. The dance takes inspiration from the poems carved into the walls by detainees held at the immigration station. We've got details at klw.org/crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The Chinese community has a long history in the Bay Area, and before China Camp was a state park, it was a place some Chinese people made their homes. Frank Kwan was one of the last residents to live there. Frank's grandfather was the first Kwan to live there, back when it was one of a handful of fishing villages that dotted the Bay Area's shores. That was when Chinese laborers were forced out of San Francisco in the late 19th century. The settlement became a state park in the late 1970s, and Frank's lifelong residency was written into the park's general plan. He would live out the rest of his life there in the wooden shacks where he grew up. He lived by himself and died in 2016. In 2014, reporter Julie Kane visited Frank to bring us his story.
Frank Kwan's porch is not really a porch. It's a couple of weather-worn picnic tables on the gravel beach just a few feet from the bay.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, how are we doing?
Good. Thirsty? We're cool.
Right now, it's cocktail hour. It's a daily ritual for Frank Kwan and his friend John Muir.
My name's John Muir. No relation.
Yes, not that John Muir.
I'm Frank Kwan.
You got a knife, Frank?
The man.
The two of them have been friends for almost 20 years. Muir has a wood shop a few buildings down the beach from Kwan's house. It all started when Kwan stopped by the San Francisco Maritime National Historical Park.
Yeah, I went over there a few times looking for a part for a engine. Yeah, that's where I first met him, and then tangled with his boss several times. Yeah.
Growled at him, I'm sure.
Growled at him.
We're like, he said, you got a whole box of parts in there. You know, why can't I get one of those? It's crazy.
Muir works for the National Park Service. He's a builder and curator of old boats. And the engine part Kwan wanted was a historic artifact to everybody except Frank Kwan. For him, it was just something he needed to keep things running at China Camp. And that piqued John Muir's interest.
I talked to him more about it, and he started ranting about that again, and finally just said, hey, listen, you don't understand. We're trying to do the same thing. We'll see what we can do. I remember getting kind of flustered with him, and he just started kind of laughing. I was like, I gave it back to him a little bit.
The boat's not fitting there, John. It's going to be tricky to get that out of there.
These days, the two friends get out on the water together whenever they can. Usually, they take out Frank's old fishing boat. It's seen better days.
It's been actually the last couple of years, lots of repairs, some few mishaps, and lots of effort just to keep it up and running, which I think is just good for Frank. I think he loses his mind when the boat doesn't work. So he's also damn handsome when he's at the helm here running it. You gonna shoot between, Frank?
Oh, yeah. Hope we don't get stuck.
They come out just to be on the water, but sometimes they try their hand at catching shrimp. Kwan says he used to bring it in by the ton, but nowadays they're lucky if they catch a hatful. Water diversion and overfishing have killed off much of the sea life. It's a part of Kwan's life that's gone for good.
It's sad. In a 30-year period, it's gone, and I'm never going to come back. And that's the hard part. You know?
Could be interviewing Frank every night and writing things down and recording this whole experience, but then it's just living it.
We're sitting in Muir's wood shop at China Camp. It's where he spends a couple days every week working on boats and talking to Kwan.
Somebody was just telling me about this quote from Wendell Berry that was about if you meet somebody like that, you should ask them questions and, you know, record what they say and think. But if you can actually get a chance just to be with them or to be one of them, that's first.
It's actually a poem by Wendell Berry, and Muir thinks about it a lot. It's called The Record.
My old friend tells us how the country changed, how the creek ran 3 weeks after a good rain, long ago, no more. You'd have to know this country mighty well before I could tell you where.
Muir's latest project is a historic Italian fishing boat that he's building by looking at faded photographs. The bay used to be full of these boats, but they don't come with plans.
Both the Chinese and the Italians sort of started out as fishermen here and then went on and left those, a lot of those traditions behind for more lucrative businesses or just rising through the social scale. So a lot of their culture is, you know, and the boats and the rig and all those things are such the everyday meditation of these people.
About 10 years ago, he built a 19th century Chinese fishing boat called a junk. Just like with the Italian boat, Muir built it from old photos. And the burned-out husks of a couple of junks they dredged up out of the mud next to Frank's house. Muir named the reconstructed boat the Grace Kwan, after Frank's mother.
My mother was Caucasian, raised by a Chinese person as a child, so she spoke Chinese fluently.
A white woman who lived among Chinese people her whole life, at a time when that was unheard of. She first came to China Camp on an outing with a friend, and that's when she met Frank's dad.
They had to go to Nevada to get married, and they couldn't get married here in California.
Yeah. Why couldn't they get married?
Because it wasn't allowed. Mixed marriage.
It was illegal, but she moved to China Camp with Frank's dad anyway and lived out the rest of her life there. She ran the family businesses, a general store, a cafe, and boat rentals for weekend picnickers. She'd grown up an orphan, and she treated everyone who came there like they were her own kids. China Camp still has that same feel, even long after her death.
And my young friend says, "Have him speak this into recorder. It is precious. It should be saved." I know the panic of that wish to save the vital knowledge of the old times, handed down, for it is rising off the earth, fraying away in the wind in the coming day.
That was an excerpt from Julie Kane's story that originally aired in 2014. Frank Kwan died in 2016, but you can still visit his boat, the Grace Kwan, at the San Francisco Maritime National Historical Park. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.